The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Craig Burley is back with us and we are happy to have him. He made it. My name is Kay Murray. It's big weekend ahead. He'll be on all the action for that. But there is a lot to talk about tonight. We'll be discussing Karim Benzema's future. We've seen some really ugly scenes in Budapest Airport as well. We'll be getting to that. But we will be starting with Lionel Messi's future, where PSG manager Christophe Galtier has confirmed that he will be leaving PSG at the end of the season. He said, "I had the privilege of coaching the best player in the history of football. This will be his last match at the Parc des Princes, and I hope that he will receive the warmest of welcomes. This year, he has been an important part of the team. It's been a great privilege to accompany him throughout the season." Let's welcome in Alex Kirkland and Frank Leboeuf to talk more about this one. But I will start with you, Craig. We've seen that Messi did win some titles with PSG, but ultimately when they brought him in, they were looking at Champions League glory. That didn't happen. How would you assess his time there?
A bit of a waste of money, if I'm being frank. I'm sure Frank and Alex probably know better than me exactly what they paid him, but it was a lot. And not to say that, you know, I'm not diminishing Messi himself. He's, during his PSG career, he's won a World Cup. But you're paying a shed load of money and salary to win Ligue 1. That, you could have done that anyway. You know, you could have spent that salary in other parts of the team if you wanted to compete for the Champions League, which is the reason they brought him in. I was disappointed when he went to France, I have to be honest. But the money, the allure of maybe Paris and blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, they brought him in to win the Champions League and it just was the circus that it always was. And, you know, I think when he looks back on it, yeah, you know, two league titles and first year wasn't so great, second year was certainly better. But they were, in fact, they were probably further away from winning the elite European competition than they ever were. So it was a lot of money to win what they were already basically winning.
Do you agree, Frank?
Well, I agree by the fact that he didn't give his best, but because maybe he cannot anymore. I remember him crying, leaving Barca, and that seemed to be the end of the world for him. And coming the day after, being welcomed and intronized to in the Parc des Princes, and I was there, and I really appreciated the time because I said, "Well, that's a good thing, you know. You have Mbappe, you have Messi. I mean, that's a big thing for the Ligue 1." And it's true that the first season wasn't that good, and. To say the less, but the second one, and he started very well this season, he was preparing the World Cup. And I think it's quite normal for a guy of his age who won everything, after winning the World Cup, that you see the downhill. It's just natural, it's just expected for me, and I wouldn't be blaming him for doing that, because he won everything, and that was the only holy grail to win the World Cup. And now he just wants to appreciate the time. But when you are in Paris Saint-Germain, when you are desperate to win the Champions League, you have expectation. And none of them, or not only Messi, none of them fulfilled that expectation. And it's why people got resentful towards him. I'm not. He was a great player. And having seen him playing for Paris Saint-Germain was something fantastic, extraordinary. Yes, it could have been better, but I wouldn't blame only him if I have to blame the Paris Saint-Germain first and the others.
Obviously, there's a lot of talk about where he'll be playing his football next season, Alex, and we're hearing Saudi Arabia, Inter Miami, Barcelona. What are the reports saying in Spain?
Well, look, we know that Barcelona would absolutely love to bring him back. We know that Barca president Joan Laporta, it would be hugely symbolically important for him if he could be you know, the president who brought Messi back to the club. We know that Xavi, the coach, Messi's former teammate as a player, would love to see Messi back as well. He's talked about that this week. The question is, can Barcelona make it work financially? We know how difficult the club's finances have been. We know how tough it was for them to bring in players last summer. We saw them selling off club assets last summer to try and make some of these transfer deals work. And it's not going to be much easier this coming summer because, of course, remember that La Liga have these spending limits for clubs based on their income and their outgoings and how much clubs are allowed to spend on their squads. So let's see if they can make it work. Barca want to be quite busy this summer in the transfer market. They've got a lot of targets. Messi is one of them. They also want to bring in players in midfield, in defence as well. There are some things that make life a little bit easier for Barca financially. We've seen this week them saying goodbye, for example, to two very senior players, two very high earners in Busquets and Jordi Alba. They are now going to be off the payroll, and that might be helpful. But even so, it wouldn't be easy for Barca to do it. They're doing everything possible to try and make it work. They're trying to kind of sell this idea to La Liga, saying that it's financially viable. But it's going to be a squeeze, especially financially, when you're up against some of the money that you're talking about there. For example, an offer from Saudi Arabia, which Barca, of course, just couldn't match. They'd be relying on kind of the sentimental aspect, trying to win Messi over in that sense. But in a way, like I say, it doesn't come down to as much as does Messi want to come back. It's can Barca make this work financially? And right now, that still looks very, very difficult.
Alex, has there been any words on the reports that we're hearing that they could go to Inter Miami and then be loaned out to Barcelona?
It feels like maybe it's a kind of sense, I suppose. And I guess the thinking from that, from a Barcelona point of view, would be that maybe that helps financially, because if they're only having to bring in Messi on loan from Inter Miami rather than bringing him in permanently, maybe they can make that work in a way that they couldn't do otherwise. It seems maybe a bit of a convoluted way to do it. I can see that, like I say, it makes a kind of sense from the outside, but we don't know right now. We can't say if financially if that would be any more doable than it would be just to bring him in a more straightforward sense. So like I say, you can see people looking at the Miami links, looking at Barca and kind of putting two and two together. But right now, we still don't know if even that kind of deal would work for Barca from a financial point of view.
What would you do if you
he's
were
25,
Messi?
He's 25, isn't he, Messi? Is he 25? This seems like an awful lot of work, an awful lot of trying to find a way for a guy that's in the twilight of his career. With all respect, he's not going back as the same Lionel Messi. That's just never going to happen. That was such stratospheric brilliance that it's just not repeatable. And you know what it does for me, it makes their finances creak, I think, even more when there's other areas that really need to be strengthened. And it gives Xavi, I think, and we've talked about this amongst all the guys, it gives Xavi some problems. Now, as Alex said, Xavi's talked about it and he said all the right things, but behind the scenes, I think it's a bit of a headache for him. He has other players that he's trying to build the team around. You're trying to build a club for the future. And I get it. He left and he didn't get to say goodbye properly and all that sort of sentimental claptrap. If there's more to this with behind the scenes and the future and coaching and blah, 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 I'll stand corrected. But if we're just talking purely from a football balance, surely to God, Barcelona need to try and look forward. You know, try to find a way how we can manoeuvre it to get this guy back when you have Pedri, you have Xavi, you have Ansu Fati, you have all these other players that have done so well for Xavi. I mean, they've won the La Liga title at a canter, albeit the chasing pack were not the strongest. How is Messi, if they were able to do this, going to come and fit in if he leaves him on the bench? What's that going to do? So, I get it in a sense, but from a club perspective, I just feel that they have to move on from what was a brilliant period that little fella gave them, but is unlikely to going to give them again.
What would you do, Frank, if you were Messi?
Oh, if I was Messi? If I was Messi, I would go to Argentina. I would fulfill a dream of an all nation. I know it would be maybe difficult for me to have a life there, But I would be absolutely crazy to go back to where I was born for a country that I just won the World Cup for. And that would be absolutely fantastic. I know he's somebody who likes to have a normal life, and maybe in Barcelona he can get that. I'm not sure about that, because an entire city is expecting him to come back. But yes, I would love to go back to Argentina and play maybe for Rosario, where he comes from, and fulfill a dream for the whole nation. But I just want to put myself into the discussion about Xavi saying that he wants Messi to come back. Of course, he has to say that. I mean, I want to be precise. I love Messi. He was a fantastic player. And I understand that fans want him to go back. But it's not financially the main problem. And I agree with Craig. It's what you're going to see on the field. I don't think Barcelona is going to play at 12 next season. Therefore, somebody has to get out, and maybe Pedri, maybe Xavi, the future of a club, in order to Messi to come back. That's the real story about that. And he's not at his peak. He's, again, what I said, on his downhill, and that's what it is, because he's a human being, even if he's still better than anybody else. He's on his downhill. And you will have to change what Xavi has done so far, because Messi comes back. That's a nightmare. I think that's a nightmare. I think Xavi must pray every day to say, well, I love my friend deeply, I would love to see him, but please don't come, because I will have to go back to where we were 2 years ago. I think that's the main concern that Xavi has, and what the people have to see, reality of it. I think that's unlikely, the possibility for Barca to go back to where they were with Messi when he was at his peak.
Meanwhile, in Spain, this morning we woke up to strong reports about Karim Benzema's future not being with Real Madrid, and that he would leave when his contract expires this month to join Saudi Arabian side Al Ittihad. But Karim Benzema has since, as the days progress, come out on his own future and said, at the moment I'm at Real Madrid and this Sunday we have a game. Why am I going to talk about my future if I'm at Real Madrid? Those who talk about my future are on the internet, and the internet is not reality. This is an interesting situation, Alex, and it seems to be changing as well. He hasn't specifically said, though, that he's not leaving Real Madrid here. So where does this leave the club?
Yeah, those quotes are quite interesting, aren't they? As much as you say what he doesn't say as what he does, because he could have come out today. This was at an awards ceremony from the newspaper Marca. He could have come out and said, I'm staying. I'm here until next summer. He didn't say that. He said, I'm here right now, which is a statement of fact. And he said, basically, don't believe everything you read on the internet, which, you know, is good advice. You probably shouldn't. But look, this is a developing story. It's been developing over the last few hours. It's been developing over the last few days as well. What do we know? We know that the plan was, both from the player's point of view and from Real Madrid's point of view, that he was going to stay for one more year until 2024. That was the plan from both sides. We know that he has received this offer, this very tempting, lucrative offer from Saudi Arabia, and part of their wider strategy that we've seen with Cristiano Ronaldo, that we've just been talking about with Lionel Messi as well. We know that Benzema was tempted by that offer. And you can understand that at the age of 35, even for a player who's earned a lot of money like Benzema, we're talking about huge sums, hundreds of millions of euros. So we know that he was tempted and he's been thinking it over. And what we've seen over the last few days and over the last few hours is this back and forth as to whether he's going to stay or he's going to go. Now we had this report coming out from our colleague Jules earlier on today saying that it looked like Benzema was off. Since then, by all accounts, Real Madrid have been pushing very, very hard for him to stay. And of course, you've always got to bear in mind whenever this information comes out, and we should say that Jules' sources when it comes to Karim Benzema are very, 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 very good. When this stuff comes out, who does this information benefit? How much of it is about negotiating tactics and trying to put pressure on one party or the other? So right now, as we speak, we don't know how this is gonna turn out. As I say, it's still a developing story. Maybe we're leaning towards Karim Benzema in the end, as we thought he would in the first place, staying at Real Madrid for one more year. But there's no doubt he has been seriously tempted by this offer from Saudi Arabia. And at this stage in his career, and with the season he's just had as well, because he's had this injury hit season, he hasn't been at his best. just coming a year after he had the best season of his career last year, of course, with Real Madrid's Champions League win and winning the Ballon d'Or individually as well. He's had this difficult campaign this year. The numbers aren't terrible, as you can see there. The numbers are fine, but he hasn't quite looked right. He's had these consistent problems with injury. He missed the World Cup as well. So it's been a difficult season. And there has been maybe the feeling, now maybe it's premature, but there's been the feeling that it's coming towards the end. And you could understand him looking at all of that and saying, OK, now's the time to go, especially because I've had this incredible offer. But like I say, right now, as we speak, we don't know which decision he's going to make. But we know that in the last hours, in the last days, it has been very much in the balance.
Somewhere in North London, a Mr. Kane has pricked his ears up and gone, oh, oh, wonder if this might happen. There could be an opening. Thinking for Real Madrid, if this was to happen, they are going to need a number nine, and they're not getting Erling Haaland, not this summer, I wouldn't imagine. Nobody really else out there that I can think of. So that would leave a gap for them. And that's been a problem area for them when Benzema has been injured, because they really don't have anybody that can come in and do a job. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what he's going to do, but, you know, it certainly would leave Real Madrid with a problem that would have to go and fill in the summer. And unless it's just Benzema playing a game of bluff here about money and power and longer deals, I don't know. But yeah, Saudi Arabia seems to be popping up quite a lot.
The place to be.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but it's certainly popping up with a lot of cash for people.
Talking about that situation then, Alex, Harry Kane, what would Real Madrid do in a situation like this? They're already looking to bring in somebody up top as well, even if Karim Benzema is to say, do they go for a big name right now if he's to go, or do they wait it out to get the likes of an Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe?
It would be a bit of an awkward one for Real Madrid this summer, because like I say, the plan was in place for this succession plan to happen next summer, when maybe someone like Haaland, maybe someone like Mbappe might be within reach. Of course, they've got Endrick, the young Brazilian sensation, coming in from Brazil in 2024 as well, when he turns 18. But if it was suddenly going to be this summer, it's difficult, because they were already looking for a centre forward. They were already looking for a number nine. Strong links with a move for Espanyol centre forward. Joselu, former Real Madrid player, and that looks like close to being completed, but that would be to be the backup striker, not the main striker. That would be to complement Karim Benzema. And so if Benzema were to go as well, all of a sudden you're looking for not one striker, you're looking for two. And as Craig says, there aren't a huge number of options on the market. Harry Kane is out there, of course, but Harry Kane would be expensive. And you look around at other names, other options. I don't think there are any really, really obvious options. We've seen some other names that Madrid have looked at over the course of the season. We've reported previously they were taking a look at Vlahovic of Juventus. Like, a lot of big clubs have been looking at Vlahovic. He was one name that was being tracked, and there have been others as well. But there aren't many other obvious candidates for this summer. And this, as I say, is an unexpected scenario for Real Madrid. They weren't expecting, and we still don't know if they'll have to, but they weren't expecting to have to replace Karim Benzema this summer. And so if they do so, like I say, it's not one forward they're looking to bring in, it's two. And especially given the fact that they're also looking to do a deal for Jude Bellingham, that will be expensive. People sometimes think Madrid have got kind of unlimited funds, and yes, they are a very wealthy club, but they don't. And so they couldn't necessarily spend big money on Bellingham, which they will, over 100 million euros, and then going out and doing the same on a forward. Maybe they can do it, but it wouldn't leave them with much in reserve.
Frank?
I mean, I know the perfect fit. I mean, we are talking somebody who can play like Benzema. I think Real Madrid is expecting maybe Karim Benzema to leave in order to get Harry Kane. Harry Kane has the same profile as Karim Benzema. He can play as a 10, like as a 9.5, and can score goals. For me, it would be the perfect fit for Real Madrid. He's a leader. He's a technical player. He's a fighter. And he has everything to be successful at Real Madrid. And I think it's an honest hesitation from Karim Benzema, because it's not all about money. Yes, money is an aspect, but you have one last year to play at the top level. And And the thing is, to answer that question, you have to make sure that you have no regrets. That's the thing. So whether it's going to go or not, I don't know. I think that he's the only one who maybe knows deep inside himself. But I already know, if he goes, that Real Madrid has to go for Harry Kane. I can put my hands on fire that Harry Kane is going to do very well at Real Madrid.
But that would be the one. I'm getting ahead of myself here quite some bit. I think we've even lapped ourselves with the Harry Kane one. Sorry for bringing it up. But that would just do it for me if there was an opening at a club like Real Madrid and there was an agreement in place. And as Alex said, it would not be cheap. Although it wouldn't be as expensive, I think, as a year or two ago because of Harry Kane's own contractual situation, which is 12 months to run and a free transfer in 12 months. But if they were to do a deal hypothetically with Tottenham and it was agreed and Harry Kane said he was really happy at Tottenham and he wanted to stay, but that'd be it. I'd just hang your boots up at that point. Happy at Tottenham ahead of Real Madrid. So, like Frank said, this could be a great opportunity for somebody if Karim Benzema goes, and there's a big gap to fill there at one of the best clubs to play at in world football, one of the most successful clubs to play at, who are potentially looking at a gaping hole in their, you know, flagship position. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Benzema's going to certainly be, you know, holding the cards to a potential domino situation here because that could set that off. But yeah, I'm with Frank. I think Kane at the moment would be perfect. He's experienced enough to go into any of these clubs, be it Real Madrid if they need it, be it Chelsea who need it, be it Manchester United who need it. Bayern Munich are talking about it. I'm not sure if that will come off or it's even a go. But all these clubs are looking for a guy of Harry Kane's profile. We know Lewandowski's at Barcelona now. We've talked about Benzema. You've got Vlahovic, as Alex said. You've got Victor Osimhen at Napoli. All these guys, and there are others, are brilliant, brilliant strikers. But Kane just fits the bill, I think, for quite a few of them, for age, profile. And let's see if Karim Benzema pulls the plug and Real Madrid have to do some business they didn't think they would have to.
Yep, Harry Kane could have a number of options to be weighing up this
Harry
summer.
Kane.
I mean, how can you not? Once you mention that Benzema might be leaving, right? How can you not make that link?
Oh, exactly. And what a chance for somebody if he does go.
But if Benzema is going, you will get a chance to see him in Real Madrid colours again this weekend. Sunday, they take on Athletic Club. And all of the games available for you in La Liga, as they have been all season, in English and Spanish on ESPN+. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Some very ugly scenes from Budapest Airport have been surfacing. It's a video of Anthony Taylor, the referee for the Europa League final, at the airport with his family being harassed by Roma fans. You can see his partner and his daughter there in tears. Just really awful scenes to have to witness. Referee groups have come out condemning these images. It all follows Jose Mourinho as well, waiting in the car park after the game to confront the referee himself. We won't show you that video because the language was very ugly also. We do have Don Hutchison joining the panel now. You're pretty angry about what you've seen today, Craig.
I've been pretty angry about the ongoing treatment of officials from both players and managers across the board. We've seen Klopp, Mitrovic, Marco Silva, and many others berate, confront, hammer officials. And all it does is gaslight the moronic following that some of them have. And when you see this, and Anthony Taylor for me is one of the best, one of the elite referees, and I didn't see the game because I was travelling back from the UK, but by all accounts, the game stunk the place out. And there's a blame game here, and managers love to play the blame game. It's not me, it's not Roma that stinks, it's not Roma that's finishing potentially sixth in Serie A, and only because Juventus have been docked points again. It's not Roma that I've lost. It's not my fault that we've lost a semi-final to a club that I've sacked, what, two managers? We're in the bottom three. Thought they were going to get relegated at one point. Sevilla, that is. Not Jose Mourinho's fault that we can't beat this team and we can't get in the top four in Italy. It's Anthony Taylor. It's others. It's referees. And when you see this at airports, never mind the fact that it's going to be referees and officials and the entourages, they get the families, the children, and you see these boneheads, right, that are basically dead from the feet up, can't think for themselves. Grown men, most of them. But where's the police? Where, when he got into the terminal, where's the security? It stood back and it did nothing, basically. It watched chairs been thrown, it watched punches been thrown, and I think somebody here trying to protect Anthony Taylor actually does throw a punch at this moron who's in his face. And it's unacceptable. But it's been breeding and breeding and breeding. And with social media, it's getting worse. It's getting worse. And the manager's behaviour for me is getting worse. And I go back to Klopp, and he's not the only one. He got his fine, he got his ban. And what did he do? Come out with some smart-ass comment about how much is a fine? Where does the money go? Taking no responsibility for the fact that he ran up into an official's face. Now, that's not as bad, clearly, as this. But it leads to different stuff outside of the ground. And Mourinho's actions and rhetoric stink the place out. He's not the only one, but he's been one of the worst for a long time. There's no official, no officials should have to put up with this. None of them. And I said it from day one. Players, and I was pretty bad myself, to be fair, and I'll hold my hands up, but it was generally all on the field. Players and managers who encroach on officials in the way that they do and use rhetoric in the way that they do, the book should be thrown at them. And whether UEFA do anything about Mourinho here or not, I don't know. Certainly Roma should be punished for these morons. But it's getting out of hand. It's been getting out of hand for a while. The FA have done a little bit about it in England. We'll see what UEFA does here. But there's no scenario where an official should be subjected, even if he has the worst of games, which I'm not suggesting Anthony Taylor had. I don't know. Even if he has the worst of games, and I'm sorry about this rant, nobody should be subjected to the disgraceful abuse, physical and mental, from these morons that Anthony Taylor and his family had to be subjected to earlier today. It's frankly unacceptable.
Don, you covered the game. It's awful to see these scenes afterwards.
I thought that was a new low, Kay, I must admit. You know, sometimes as a player, when you're on the pitch, and probably as a coach, manager, you can get caught up in the heat of the moment. But Jose had a lot of time after the game and he knew exactly what he was doing. He could have calmed down. He probably would have had a conversation with the players, with his managing team. Then he went out and tried to look for Anthony Taylor as he was getting in the car. Then it incites the fans at the airport, which is horrendous to see. And this has not been a one-off for Jose this season, Kay. His team have had so many yellow cards, Roma that is, this season. Himself, Jose, he's had 3 red cards this season. His backroom staff got booked. Players were getting booked left, right and centre. I think my last card count last night was about 13, 14. And it was awful. And it's an awful sight to see. But also as well, when you think about the new wave of young kids coming through that want to be referees, and they see those images, my word, it must put them off massively. And there must be so many, and I speak to people like Dermot Gallagher, who are great guys, and Chris Foy, who I work with, and they tell me there's loads of teenagers on the right path coming through, and there's so many good young referees trying to break their way into the Football League and hopefully one day into Premier League European football. And you see scenes like that, and you see his partner and his daughter in tears. It's awful. It's horrendous. It was a horrendous watch.
Just before we bring the other guys in, it won't be long. This bleeds all the way down. You go and ask, and all the countries, you go and ask people who are officiating at grassroots, be it boys and girls under 10s, under 9s, under 12s, under 18s, amateurs. You go and ask if the abuse, physical abuse to these referees, who most of them turn up, by the way, as a pastime and a hobby to help. You go and ask if the physical violence that they're subjected to is getting worse or better. I'll tell you the answer. Worse by a million miles. So it bleeds all the way down to grassroots and, worryingly, to kids' football. From both supporters of the kids' football, but more worryingly, some parents of boys and girls think it's acceptable to treat officials in the manner in which some of them do, not them all, some of them do, because they're seeing people like Mourinho and others, some of the elite level managers that have walked this planet, behaving in the way they do, and that starts a domino effect that ripples all the way down the game. And that's what Don's saying. Is it any surprise when people say, do you want to be a referee? You know, do you want to be a referee? It's hard. It's bloody hard to be a referee. Go and try it. I couldn't do it. And so this has a ripple effect, players and managers, all the way down to kids' football. The kids' football has never been worse for referees getting shouted at and abused and sometimes having to suffer physical altercations. It's, again, I say, I've been angry about this for a long, long time. And I know I'm not the only one on that ship.
No, that is true. So let's change the subject a little bit, shall we, and go onto the pitch right now to talk about something more positive, the team that won, and something that was standout from Lucas Ocampos in the penalty shootout when he took a no-look penalty. Now, Craig and Frank, you guys both took penalties. Would you ever had the guts to do this, Frank?
No. I mean, that's... again, when you play with a goalkeeper, when you do something, I don't like that, you know. I mean, there is a way for me, and the only way to score a penalty is to pick a side and to not play with the goalkeeper. So don't turn your head, don't close your eyes. Well, one was doing that. It was Johan Niskens at the time, but he was the specialist of the specialist of penalties. And he told me he was picking a side, closing his eyes and shooting strong on the grass. You have to make sure you score. That's the only thing matter. How you shoot it, I don't care, as long as you score. That's the only thing. If you try to play against with the goalkeeper and you don't score, you're unprofessional for me. So he scored, so everything's fine.
It's like the Panenka, isn't it? Frank, I never saw Frank do a Panenka.
No, of course not.
No.
I never did that. No, in Qatar, I did only one thing where I had a run, you know, pretending that I was shooting with my right foot like it does, but right now, but I put the outside of my left foot. I did only once, but it was in Qatar. So
listen, you do what you want in Qatar. Nobody knows about it.
Is it a big deal that Ocampos did this, though?
No. Who said it's a big deal?
No, but like, is it impressive to you that he did this?
I think it's cool. I think it shows a lot of confidence. But the end result is the only thing that really matters, not how you get it there. It's a very cocky, confident way of doing it. But is that... I think that's to be applauded, really, in
Craig,
players. But
Craig, imagine he doesn't score. Imagine he doesn't score, Craig. He looks like a fool.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's the only thing I say.
But
I saw Cantona trying a chip,
trying
a panenka and missing it. And
yeah, but that's Eric.
He didn't score. That was horrible.
But Eric Cantona could get away with anything, couldn't he?
Yes.
But no, fair play. You know, at the end of the day, you know, some players, that's just their mentality, and certainly not for me, having taken penalties for several clubs. It's I'm thinking about how hard I'm going to hit it and how accurate I'm going to hit it. But everybody's different. That's what makes the world go round.
Yes, actually, we say Eric Cantona could get away with anything. He couldn't. That was proven. Let's talk about Sevilla, though.
United.
Yes.
He couldn't jump into the stands.
No, he could not do that. Absolutely, nor should he have. Alex, let's talk about what this means to the rest of Spain. How do they see Sevilla winning this? Does it matter to them? Are they proud of a Spanish side winning the Europa League?
Yeah, there's huge pride in the record of Spanish teams in European football over the last 25 years. And when you look at the number of times that Spanish teams have won the Champions League or have won the Europa League, it's remarkable. And of course, so many of those Europa League wins have been Sevilla. They've won this competition seven times in the last 17 years, between 2006 and 2023. You think, you know, lots of Sevilla fans have seen their team lift this European trophy seven times. It's remarkable, and it's almost like it doesn't matter how good Sevilla are that season, who the coach is, which players they've got, who they're up against, they somehow find a way to go and win it. We saw it in the past with Sevilla under Unai Emery, and we've seen it right the way through the years. Like I say, seven times up until now. This one is maybe the most remarkable one yet, because, as the guys were saying, this is a team that was battling relegation, not in the first half of the season, but like a month or two ago. In a very, very recent past, they were a real danger of going down. They brought in José Luis Mendilibar, this veteran La Liga coach, but a coach who had never coached this record. He'd never coached a European tie before. His record in Europe in its entirety is knocking out Manchester United, knocking out Juventus, and now winning the final against Roma on penalties. It's very, very special. And like I say, this connection between Sevilla and the Europa League, you know, people say here in Spain it should be renamed the Sevilla League or whatever. It's remarkable, especially given the season that they've had. It could have been even more remarkable, of course. Think about this. Just imagine if Sevilla had got relegated and won the Europa League. They'd be playing in the Champions League next season and in the second division. Even so, going to the Champions League, considering where they were just a few months ago, yeah, it is truly remarkable.
That's a big point as well, though, isn't it? That when you actually look at recent winners in the Europa League, with Alex there talking about Sevilla's league position in La Liga, if you look at Frankfurt last year, their league position 11th, Villarreal the season before 7th, what does that tell us about this competition, that it is mid-table teams that are going on to win it?
Yeah, and I think it's tough to say that you look at that and say, well, maybe the so-called big boys don't take it as serious, but they kind of do when it gets into the latter stages. You know, Barcelona took it serious, got put out. Man United, who Alex mentioned, took it serious, put Barcelona out, looked like they were one of the favourites. Sevilla put them out, fielded strong teams, did not field weakened teams, maybe had one or two injuries. And so I don't really know what the narrative is around that scenario. But certainly from Sevilla's point of view, and before, I think it was Unai Emery at one point at Sevilla winning the Europa League. But it's an amazing feat. And why teams are winning it from a position, you would say, not of strength in the domestic leagues, I'm not really 100%, because I do think the big boys, particularly as this competition kicks on and the Champions League teams drop down, I think they do take it serious. But for some reason, we're seeing teams that are sitting near the mid-table in their own leagues winning it. So that's not a bad thing, is it?
No, and an incredible achievement for Sevilla once again. And of course, as Alex mentioned, José Luis Mendilibar. But brilliant to see them win the Europa League once again with everything that was going against them this season. Thanks so much for being with us, Alex Kirkland. We'll hear from him again very soon. And make sure to catch the latest Gab and Jules podcast that dropped today. It's actually the Gab and Stu.
I'll tell you what, Jules has changed.
Podcast age, today. Whenever is it the Gab and Jules podcast these days, huh?
It's here, look, Jules. It's with Messi leaving.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just a look at Manchester City's stunning season so far. Is it about to get even better? They still are in the hunt for the FA Cup coming up this weekend and the Champions League as well. They're in the final to take on Inter. Well, earlier this week, Bernardo Silva sat down with ESPN to talk about Pep Guardiola's coaching philosophy and how he's consistently changing things to stay fresh and keep the others guessing.
He doesn't stop. He knows that the game is evolving, so he doesn't let the other teams adapt to us. He creates, every year, he tries to create something different and new so that the other teams, they don't get used to the way we play and try to make it more difficult for them to defend us, to attack against us, because we change our setup, we change our build-up, we change the way we attack and defend. And yeah, that changed my way of viewing the game, because I always thought that if a team was doing well, if you keep doing those things well, you'll keep winning. And it just proves me wrong every season, because we do well and it changes so that we keep doing even better.
Frank and Don are still with us. Frank, how difficult is it to do that, regardless of how good a player you are, to keep changing all the time? Or does that give a measure of how good a player you are?
Well, it's you have to adjust all the time, and yeah, it's always a wonder, you know, whether you're gonna be okay with that, if you'll be able to follow what the coach wants, and therefore if you will still playing, you know, for him. But it's a big challenge, and I think it's very interesting to hear that comment. I really think that Guardiola would be remaining as one of the biggest coach ever in terms of creation, what he was able. He made mistakes. He made mistakes in Chelsea where he didn't put Rodri, but he changed so many things. You know, bringing a goalkeeper, bringing Ederson was a huge surprise, because everybody tried to press Manchester City. And he found a way by having a goalkeeper, being able to overplay the pressing from the opponent and play a little bit further up, and that was for me amazing. You have to have the players for that. He has the players. He spent like $1 billion or $2 billion to make sure that he can evolve, as Bernardo Silva said in that matter, because, you know, I'm not sure you can do that, and I won't name any club or any players, but it's not affordable to everyone. He has the team for that, he has the squad for that, and it's why he tried that, because he knows that they're capable of adjusting to to a new tactic.
Show me a neutral that doesn't love themselves a Bernardo Silva. Neutral, that is. Not obviously Man United fans and others, but he's. Are we talking about Silva or Pep here? Silva, I just love watching Bernardo Silva play. And it's interesting, every summer it seems to be Bernardo Silva's not happy, he's going to Barcelona, he wants out, blah, blah, blah. But yet, every time I see him, he's on the field and Guardiola's got the arm around him. And he's playing brilliantly. Now, he hasn't always played brilliantly, but he is at the moment. He's a little gem at the moment. I mean, his goals in the... what game was that? Real Madrid game.
Semi-final.
The headed goal. Yeah, the headed goal. The first goal was great. The headed goal was sublime. But it's the positions he takes up. It's how he takes care of the ball. How he takes it in tight areas and sort of twists away from people. And he's got a physical element to him as well. And he's got to be the size of Dan Thomas, hasn't he? No, he's not the biggest.
There we go.
He's not the biggest. He's not the biggest chap in the room. But he handles himself. He's got an aggressive element to him. And yeah, you know, if you're not playing well, you're out the team. And, you know, Grealish found that out. Mahrez has found it out. And that's what the manager does. And yeah, look, you have to have the squad to do that. I understand. But it puts an extra pressure on you as a player to go in and perform. And it would be a hard argument, maybe Erling Haaland with his goals, but it would be a hard argument at the moment to say there's anybody playing better and more consistently than the little Portuguese magician, Bernardo Silva. He has been brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And we're hearing from him there, John, that Pep is just constantly, yes, he has the luxury to do it, but constantly trying to stay one step ahead of everybody else. Mm.
I love the line there when he said that Pep doesn't allow teams to adapt to us. I think that's fascinating because normally you'd like to think, looking from the outside, if his system's 4-2-3-1 and they're winning leagues and they're winning cup competitions and they're winning plenty of them, he ain't going to change because he knows he's got good players. Well, the fact that he's adapting Guardiola because he knows that a lot of people are watching on, including some talented managers, coaches, where they might nick his ideas and styles. I think it's an amazing that he's adapted. I think at some points this season I've seen them play. I think the game Fulham comes to mind. I think the Leeds game comes to mind, where almost he was playing 1990s football, where he had Alvarez and Haaland as a front two. Big man, little man, played 4-4-2, Grealish off the left, Bernardo Silva off the right. But I think what he does best of all, I think Guardiola, is I think he makes really good players into world-class players. And I think that's what Craig's saying about Bernardo Silva, same with Kevin De Bruyne. Rodri now, I think, looks... And it's fascinating when you try and pick the one player in a Man City team that Guardiola would pick first, and anyone can go for any name. You could go for the obvious, like Haaland. I would probably think of someone like Rodri. And when I watch the players, it's almost like you've got to have a real football high IQ to play for Guardiola. Gundogan's got it. Rodri's got it. Bernardo Silva's got it. The job he's done on John Stones, converting him into an orthodox centre-back to sometimes play right-back to now playing in central midfield, running off like a number eight we see in the Real Madrid game for the Bernardo Silva goal. He really tests these players, and I like that. And I think that's the mark of a genius manager.
I think most of them, the managers at standards, you know, they set such standards with their players that when they fall below it, they're out. And we can go through all these names, and Don mentioned most of them. But look at Manuel Akanji. How many mistakes has Manuel Akanji made this year for Man City? Not many, if any. He's consistently been excellent. Go back to his time at Dortmund. And yeah, they were a more error-strewn side, but he was more prone to make mistakes. You can't get away with that at this club with this manager and with most elite managers. And so, as Don was saying, it makes players step up, whether it's in an attacking sense or whether it's in a defensive sense, which has been an Achilles heel for them, particularly in the Champions League. And so I have seen a noted difference this year in the way they've defended. They've been less cavalier. I mean, they've played brilliantly, but they've been less cavalier, leaving themselves less exposed at the back, and we'll see if they take that into the FA Cup final at the weekend and then the following week into the Inter game. But that's been something that, whilst all the brilliance around with the De Bruyne's and the Silvers and the Haalands in previous years has been lauded, and then that one thing at the back one or two mistakes has come back to haunt them at key moments. Certainly in the second half of the season, we're not seeing that anywhere near as much. And that's what makes this Manchester City side such a hard team to dismantle. Not impossible, but extremely difficult.
Yeah, Manchester United are certainly hoping it won't be impossible. They take them on this weekend in the FA Cup final. And we'll be giving you a full preview for that game on tomorrow's show, focusing on Manchester United as well as Manchester City. This is The Game coming up. Craig will be back on the coverage for it. ESPN2 and ESPN Plus, big coverage for you Saturday beginning at 8:30 Eastern. Make sure not to miss it. Can Manchester United upset the treble hopes of Manchester City? Stick around, extra time coming up next on And Frank Back to Answer Your Questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig Burley is back.
Tell you what, there's two people who should pack up and move to different countries, right? One, Derek Ray. Right? Derek might as well just put his house on a ship somehow. I don't know if he can do that, but and move it to Germany, probably Cologne.
Cologne.
Yeah, Cologne.
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 Cologne. Cologne.
Cologne.
Cologne. And the Cologne. Other one is Hutch.
Yeah.
Hutch needs to go to Italy, take the family. Yeah. Buy a place. He's in love with Italy. Not to say Italy's a fantastic place to go.
Or he could come here and be with us every week.
Are you still coming here, Don? No?
Yes, mate. End of June, I think.
You got your visa sorted? They're letting you in?
Well, it was so weird because filling the sort of visa forms in, we got so far down the line, we got a sort of semi-automated voice saying, you actually don't even need a visa. You could have just filled in a normal form and you can come, you can go. Ridiculous.
Frank doesn't need a visa. He just tells them I won the World Cup and they let him in.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Frank?
But a funny feeling, Don, you're not.
Of course it is. People, you don't have to believe to everything Kamara says, you know. That's not true. I need a visa, otherwise they don't accept me.
You can't just come over here with any kind of visa and work.
Done.
Well, apparently you can. What's it called? Etsy or something?
An ESTA.
An ESTA.
Yeah, you can't work on an ESTA.
An ESTA's for holidaymakers.
No. You can put short. If it's under 90 days, you can do it on an ESTA. If your work is under 90 days, apparently.
Right. We've opened the can of worms here.
Let's just move on. Yes.
Should move on.
Is there any immigration lawyers watching?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Who cares? It's boring.
For all of you, he was only lying anyway, he was just joking, just making light of it. For all of you, if you're Declan Rice, would you go to Bayern or stay in the Premier League?
No-brainer.
Go on then, Don.
A no-brainer. Italy. Well, yeah, Italy, yeah. No, you're staying in the Premier League. You're staying in the Premier League, of course you are. You're not going to go to Bayern. Not even...
Wait, I've just won the league again.
Bayern... You've seen how they nearly threw it away and then won it back again. But ask Sadio Mane if he's enjoyed his time at Bayern. If you're Declan Rice, you're not entertaining that move. You'd entertain the conversation with Thomas Tuchel, but you're looking at Man United, you're looking at Liverpool, you're looking at Man City. There's rumours in England that City are very interested in the swap deal with Calvin Phillips. Listen, you want to play under Pep. You want to play under Klopp. You want to go and play for Arsenal.
Yeah, but Arsenal were mentioned. I mean, City. I mean, Rodri. You know, they're not going to play with two players.
Well, Gundogan might leave. His contract's up. So no, maybe.
I know, but Declan Rice is more of a Rodri type than a Gundogan. Don, you know, he's.
All right, City off the table then.
I'm not saying they're off the table.
But let's say they are.
I can see Calvin Phillips going somewhere else because that lad is just not getting enough game time. But I think there's always a worry if you go to City in that position. I'm a huge fan of Rodri. You might not play as often, as good as Declan Rice is, and I think he's a terrific player. I think it's a better fit for Arsenal. I think Thomas Partey was terrific for the bulk of the season, then sort of lost his way at the end with some injuries and some form. But I do think Declan Rice is a step up there, big step up. And if Arsenal won it, move to the level of, and they were close, but move to that next level and don't stand still, They have to be looking at people like Rice and Caicedo and others. So, and obviously Man United is needed, you know, Casemiro's in there. Sometimes they play with two, sometimes they don't. Casemiro's in his 30s. That's not going to last forever. So, yeah, I think something like that rather than Bayern Munich. But I'm kind of struggling to see the City side of it at the moment. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Obligatory percentage question for Don. Obligatory. Percentage chance you give the three newly promoted teams in the Premier League, Burnley, Luton and Sheffield United, of staying in the league beyond next season?
What, all three?
Maybe you could do each one. So Burnley.
I was going to say. Burnley, I think, might have a 30% chance of staying up, 25% chance of staying up. Luton, my former club, I don't want to be too down on them. They've not even kicked the ball, but I can't see that happening. Sheffield United, another one of my former sides. No, I'd probably say Luton, Sheffield to go with Bournemouth.
So low percentage for those guys. Mm. All right, question for Frank. Have you ever confronted a referee after a match the way that Mourinho did after yesterday's Europa League final?
No, not that way. I had a talk in Qatar with one of the French referees when he came to ref in Doha. He was refereeing the game that we lost in Zurich against Zurich when Roberto Di Matteo broke his leg and his two bones, his fibular, and I don't know how you say in English the other bone. And the referee gave a free kick against him. And I got crazy on the field. I insulted him and I got 4 games banned, and we talked about that. But Craig mentioned that during the game, there is what you do on the field and how you have to behave outside of the field in a normal life. You have to respect the human being. So you can be overwhelmed on the field because you have to react very quickly to something. But after you have the time to think about, maybe to calm down and just to talk about it as a normal, well-educated person.
For all, who was the biggest breakout star in the Premier League? Evan Ferguson, Jacob Ramsey, or Alejandro Garnacho, or someone else? So this season.
Well, Jacob Ramsey's been playing for a year or two now at Villa.
Yeah.
Don't think Garnacho was.
But even so, sometimes you just have that season where you make your statement, right? Who do you think that's been this season?
It has to be a youngster, off the top of my head. I mean, Evan Ferguson, he looks a handful to me. I think he's still a teenager. Hmm. Big, strong, scores goals. He was taken off at Chelsea. Had to come off injured at Chelsea a couple of months ago, and he was running riot at the time. Absolutely running riot. So, yeah, I think the biggest breakout star is probably the Brighton manager. And not that he's breaking out in terms of football management, but certainly in the Premier League. Because he's managed in Italy, he's managed in Ukraine, he's got experience. But just to take that Brighton side to another level was something. He took what was already good and he made it even better. And Evan Ferguson is part of that. Yeah, I think him, off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody else, but I think he's a terrific young striker, big physical boy, good feet, brave. Yeah, could be a cracking player for another 10 years or so.
What do you say, Don?
I think out of that list, I think it's Evan Ferguson. A mate of mine, Mark Beard, who I used to play with, had him at Brighton when he was sort of 15, 16, 17. And he put on social media, and Mark Beard's a really cool guy. He's a nice guy as well. He's not like a social media sort of hobbit where he just throw a statement line and try and just reel everyone in. And he said in a tweet, I think about a month and a half ago, he said the best young kid he's ever coached. He went real intelligent footballer. The height is obviously Craig said. Left foot, right foot, first touch for a teenager. He went, he will go right to the very top. And he said he's got potential to be better than Duncan Edwards. And you throw that statement in, you go, wow, that is some statement. I think you could look at Mitoma for £2.5 million. I think you could look at Enciso. But I think that list there, I think it has to be Ferguson. If you're someone like Tottenham and you're entertaining bids for Harry Kane in the summer and you're maybe thinking about a player that could be a young Harry Kane. When Harry Kane first got in the Tottenham side, he couldn't get in a Premier League side. He had to wait until the Europa League and he was banging in goals. Then he started hitting his straps when he got Premier League games. You could put that Evan Ferguson in a Tottenham side and he might get close to being something like Harry Kane in 3, 4, 5 years' time.
Right. Next question's for all of you. I'll start with you, Frank. Prime Drogba or Harry Kane?
I know where Frank's going for.
That's a very odd discussion because it's it goes to two players who play in two different teams, and you have to consider that. I think in terms of skills, I would say that Harry Kane has better skills. Technically, he was better, but Drogba was a hell of a finisher, and he was crucial in many very important games, and he made an impact, a crazy impact when he played for Chelsea. And I remember what his only year playing for Marseille, where he brought Marseille to the Europa League final. A crazy player, fantastic. I like the spirit of the guy. But how to make a decision between the two? You know what? They could have played together. That's my best answer. They could have played together.
Well, I'm going to say Harry Kane just to keep up the persona of annoying Chelsea fans. Actually, I bumped into a Chelsea fan at Boston Logan yesterday on my way back from the UK, and he was really nice to me.
It's a shame you can't send the courtesy the
I don't know,
way.
Frank. I don't know. It was amazing. The fella was a nice fella. He said to me, "What about our team?" And I said, "Who's our team?" Chelsea. So I tried my best to get on this. It was really nice to me.
Maybe it's just from the Chelsea days and not watching us on FC. Maybe if you watched on FC,
well,
we were
in agreement that it was a shambles this year.
Okay.
Which it obviously has been. We'll see if it changes.
Yeah, the thing is, they cannot disagree with you this year. They could have disagreed with you the year before, but this year nobody can disagree with you. That's the thing.
No.
Well, there's a new season coming, so there's a new season of fakes and debates.
Angie, Todd Bowley is, I think he's maybe stepping aside somewhat.
Yes.
I know there's one or two others.
Stepping aside from heading into the dressing room and taking those matters into his own hands.
I'm sure the new incumbent manager has maybe had some words about certain...
Like he did at Spurs.
Certain things happening around the dressing
Hopefully.
Room.
Hopefully.
Right. Yes, I think so. Don, same question for you on Drogba or Kane.
It's such a good question because, as Frank said, they play different positions. I mean, Harry Kane plays as a 9, drops into 10. I don't know. I think if I'm picking an 11 and I've got one to choose from and I'm going, right, he's my man, I think I'd say Drogba.
God, I would have lost the bet there. I thought Don would have said Osimhen. He loves a bit of old Victor.
He does love Victor. All right.
I was away.
We missed you.
No, we didn't.
We did.
I could believe it. Wasn't it a shame, Spalletti?
Yeah.
No. I know I'm changing subject a little bit. He wants to take
a
year off.
Tired.
He's tired, wants to take a year out.
Yeah. Gutted. Not as gutted as Don. For Don and Frank.
Tired. Did you say tired, Don?
That's what he said. He said he's tired.
Yeah.
And by the way, talking of Italy, Craig, guess where I am this weekend?
You're going to Naples, aren't you?
I am. I'm going to Naples for the Sampdoria game.
So whoever's following, I'm not on Instagram, but you'll be, no doubt, there we are, posting lots of photos, what pizzas and...
Best atmosphere, best pizzas, best ground.
Coffees, espressos.
Dan's going to get it. Dan's going to get loads of them.
Dan's going to get it. Just absolutely bombard him. He'll love that. All right, for Don and Frank, when did they first meet Craig and what was their opinion of him? He has a reputation for being grumpy, but he seems like a fun guy outside of football.
That guy
Craig,
knows Frank. That guy
Craig,
knows
where
me.
Craig, where did we meet?
Go on then,
PLP?
Dom.
No. Don, I'll remind you, we met during their days playing together for the Scotland national team.
Oh, I forgot about all that, yeah, apart from that.
No, we played against each other. Actually, there was a game where that West Ham game, Chelsea, he scored and I scored. That was a long time ago, before Frank was at Chelsea. I think it was 93, 94. But then we played... why am I answering this?
Craig,
I'm answering this
because...
Because he has no idea.
Ezio. Is it Ezio? Craig was an unbelievable moaner in the Scotland national team. Frightening moaner, right? His toes come out the pram. Your toes come out the pram once when you had enough of playing right wing and you wanted to play centre mid and you were on Bruni. I'm sick of playing right wing. I'm sick of going up and down. I want to play in the middle.
Me?
Yes.
Not
yes.
Me, Don. Never,
it was
never
you.
Complain.
You get out. Only once I've seen you complain. Only once. You wanted to be in the middle. You wanted it to be all about you.
Wow.
Doesn't sound like you.
I thought it was all about me. I mean, but I actually did the same thing to him before at the World Cup. Before that, I had a right moan at him in the 98 World Cup. Oh, my God. Went up to his room. After the Brazil game, which was the first game, we had the Norway game coming up a few days later in Bordeaux. And I went up to his room, him and Alec Miller. Oh, I had a right whine at him. Because we'd played shadow, played some shadow 11s. And he'd put me at wing back again for the Norway game. Oh, I lost the plot. Lost it, straight up to the room. Big whine on, all the toys out the pram. Diaper on, the lot. Straight in, bosh. Had a right whine.
Moaning.
Played wing back.
Frank, do you remember the first time you met Craig?
Yes, yes, I do. It was a lot with Archie, Kevin Hitchcock, with Mark Hughes, with David Lee, and don't forget that the guy is Scottish. And when you're French and you first come to England and you talk to a Scottish guy, you wonder if he speaks English or another language, you know. So it was a very hard time for me to understand Craig, and I tried to do my best, but it was quite hard. And when we are with friends, you know, they even talk quicker, you know, faster, and they cut words. But I always thought that
Clarkie, by the way,
he was a charming person.
I was easier to understand than Clarkie. Surely.
Oh, yes. Yes, for sure. Clarkie and the Cockney one, Wisey. I couldn't understand Wisey. I still don't. Don't worry.
But, Cockney one.
Yeah, so it's you know, he always been charming. I think he had kind of a classy behavior, you know, and he was a nice person and, of course, a very good player.
Sounds like me.
Classy.
Hey, Frank thought the most universally used word ever in England when he came was shut up. Because almost...
Yeah, true.
He thought... No, I'm being serious. Not in a bad way. But I tell you what, if I had a dollar for every time one of that squad of 20 for 12 months said, shut up, Frank! We'd have been billionaires.
But that's why, because I'm a curious person. I like to know people, I like to converse with people, and I wanted to know, you know, their lives, and I wanted to do better in English, and it's why I talk to them. But they don't like French people, it's why they hate French people.
Well, we've got to wrap it up from the Geordie one, the French one, the Scottish one, and the Smoggy one. We'll see you tomorrow. Smoggy.
What's a Smoggy?
I'm a Smoggy.
What's a Smoggy?
Someone from Middlesbrough. See you tomorrow. Yeah.